Loyal listeners, welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast. It has been a minute. I'm Dan Favalli. I'm coming at you without Adam Frommel or Andy Bailey today, but fear not, because we have Miami Heat insider for Bleacher Report, Zach Buckley, is here to talk with us about the start to Miami's quarter season. How are you doing today, Zach?
No complaints, man. Glad to be here.
Are you feeling better than the 7-13 Heat, though, is the question?
I'm doing better for sure than before they left for the road trip last week. There was some optimism around them then that maybe the road trip would be a chance for this team to bond. There's obviously so many new pieces on that team. Udonis Haslam's the only one who's been there more than two seasons at this point. So there's so many moving pieces, so many guys on one-year deals, so many young guys. It's not a great setup in terms of developing, managing chemistry. But they were optimistic, like I said, that maybe this road trip would kind of spur that thing in motion. And look, they left, had a tough back-to-back in Denver and Utah, took both sides of that, and then played a good game in Portland. So I'm doing better than before they left, but at this point they might have surpassed me.
Now, I think my biggest question, well, I have like eight really big questions about the Heat. One of them, though, is who's filled like the leadership void in that locker room? Like with Dwayne Wade being gone, Luol Deng being gone, Bosh isn't around the team, LeBron's been gone. I assume Haslam takes it upon himself to some extent, but like you want your leader to play.
Right. And that's something that even going back to media day, UD touched on back then. He said, you know, obviously he knows the culture better than anyone. He knows Spoelstra better than anyone. He knows what's expected here. But his words only carry so much meaning, you know, when he's barely getting off the bench.
Wait, he actually said his words only carry so much meaning?
He didn't necessarily say that, but he said we need a leader on the floor.
Okay.
So he conceded awesome. That he would not be the on-floor leader. So it's been a weird dynamic. You know, I think, frankly, I've been really impressed with Whiteside, specifically really? In the leadership department. He's not a guy who does the best job of, you know, hiding frustrations all the time, doesn't bring the best body language. But you see those areas getting better. And one thing I've noticed is, there's growing pains with this team. Like I said, a lot of young guys. So you've seen some players make some mistakes, some bad passes, some questionable decisions. And Hassan's been the first guy over to him, giving him that handshake, giving him that pat on the back. And I don't think that's anything people expected Hassan to do, because he was the guy getting the pat on the back from Wade, right, from Bosh, from all those guys. So he's really impressed. Dragic, I think, is obviously there because, you know, he's the point guard. He's the extension of the coach. He's controlling the offense.
I can't understand him when he speaks, though. So how do his teammates understand him?
That's the issue. And again, I'll go back to the same thing because Haslam cracked me up. He said, he goes, you know, Goran could be the leader, but half the time we don't understand what he's saying. and then he changed his quote later to say, by the way, we don't always understand what Hassan is saying either. But I think, you know, at least they're sort of on more of the same wavelength with Whiteside. I think Dragic has been able to, he obviously doesn't have the off-court connection, maybe that some guys do, because there's an age gap with a lot of the guys. There's a culture difference, obviously. But, you know, a lot of the young guys, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, even Justice Winslow told me Goran's been really good with just kind of pulling them aside when he sees something in game and sort of giving them that advice that, hey, you could have made this pass or you could have made this read or here's what I would have done. So it's been those two, UD kind of overseeing everything. But, a lot of this team is just kind of, it's Spoelstra's team is how Whiteside put it. Spo leads the way and everyone's kind of falling in line behind him. And I think that's what you're seeing.
One of my, I guess, primary concerns coming into the season for him was, would he be good without the old version of the Heat? You know, I think even some of the on-court numbers show that he didn't necessarily need Dwayne Wade last year, or Luol Deng wasn't that important to him, but not having those guys around him he had all those safety nets, and now he doesn't. And he's still been phenomenal. And I'm moving past the whole he's put doubters to bed. He's actually really good. He's just really good, no matter what vacuum you're putting him in. And I'm wondering if we can ask a question like, you know, is he better than a guy like Andre Drummond? He's older, doesn't pass as well, but Drummond isn't the greater passer either. And it seems like Whiteside can maybe impact the defensive side of the ball a little bit more. They're both kind of the same player on the offensive end, pick and roll. The Heat do not force feed Whiteside as many post-ups as the Pistons do to Drummond. But it just seems like, is that a conversation that we can have? Is Hassan Whiteside that good?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a conversation you could have based off what he's done already this season, moving into the spotlight. And frankly, it's been, I think, more of a seamless transition than anyone could have expected. You know, the one thing I worried about with Wade leaving, and obviously, you know, those guys gave him direction, that sort of thing, but Wade was always really good at looking for Hassan and kind of getting him involved. And it seemed like Whiteside was one of those guys that needed a touch, you know, every other minute or whatever it was, to sort of keep him engaged and keep him playing hard and keep him playing, you know, impactful basketball. He'll go stretches this season where he's not getting those touches. I don't think there's necessarily a guy who says, hey, I've got to get Hassan going. And what's impressed me about that is he's still going to deliver. He doesn't give you those sort of ineffective moments, at least nearly as often as he used to. You're looking at him, you know, 16 double-doubles in 20 games. Only Russell Westbrook's got more double-doubles than him. Leading rebounder in the NBA by almost 2 per game. Second in block shots. And he's not, you know, he's always been a good shot blocker, right? You know, nobody's doing it with blocks. But now he's not just chasing those highlight swats. He's not chasing those kind of volleyball spike into the stands.
Right, he's keeping the ball in play more, it seems like. Is there a stat for that? We need a stat for that.
Exactly. He'll get you those, you know, snatch blocks where he's just pulling it down. You know, he's getting better at coming out to the perimeter to challenge shooters, which is a big issue for him. Even early in this season, when they played the Spurs, I think it was the third game, he kind of let Pau Gasol roam wherever he wanted, and Gasol kind of ate him up. And I think the Memphis trip, when Memphis came here, you kind of saw that with Gasol, the other Gasol, Mark. Hassan lost him a couple times. They eventually just switched Hassan off him because he was having a tough time covering him. But for the most part, he's challenged shots better. I think he's done better sort of rerouting some pick and rolls. He's a little bit more active in that. But he's really just kind of fortifying himself as a legit rim protector and not just a shot blocker. Players shooting 41% against him at the rim. That's the best number among high-volume bigs. So that shows you, you know, he's not just swatting shots like he used to. He's legitimately changing them. You know, and then you look at offense. Like you said, he's not a guy you run a lot of post-ups through, run a lot of looks through, but just that pick-and-roll game is so effective. 87th percentile as a pick-and-roll roll man.
That's sort of facing some of like the worst paint traffic jams in the league. Like you even said it, the way the teams defend the Heat is just packed the paint. Hassan Whiteside's just so his catching, like in his touch and ability to finish through all that is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and he's talked about, you know, he said he kind of feels like this pin to sort of get him bowling balled in the lane because there's so many guys and so many bodies just hitting him. But yeah, that's become their identity. Is sort of that pick and roll around him, and that's been such a force that, you know, him off court versus on court, when he's on, he's going to add 10 points per 100 possessions to their offensive output, which is just a staggering number when you consider this guy's 23rd percentile in post-ups. He's not a guy you just dump it in and let it happen, but just the impact of that, the chaos he can cause with that vertical spacing as a lob threat has just been magnificent this season.
The last question I have on him is, I guess just put everyone at ease. Like, it says the Heat are worse defensively, statistically, with him on the floor. A lot of that seems like it has to do with the last 5 or 7 games that you talked about where their defense has just been bad overall. Is that just like a symptom of the lineups that he's facing as opposed to what other players are facing? Because if you look at Adam Frommel's NBA math statistic, like, Hassan Whiteside is just a beast in terms of being a defensive plus. Like, he saves so many points on the defensive side. But the Heat are just... And it's like you even said, I don't think you would look at him and be like, oh, the Heat are just going to be 10 points better per 100 possessions offensively, and yet they are. You know, a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that he plays a lot alongside Dragic. So is it kind of like the same story on defense? Like, the Heat are probably lucky that they're not even worse with him on the floor because of these guys that he's playing around?
Right, yeah. There's not a lot of plus defenders on the roster to begin with. And I think the most reliable ones that you have had, our guys are on the injury report right now. You know, Josh Richardson hasn't been playing. Justice Winslow, Deion Waiters. A lot of the, you know, Waiters, in fact, is really impressed as a defender. He might be a name that catches some people off guard. But kind of those have been three of their more trusted perimeter pieces. All of them have been missing in this defensive downturn, which has really exposed Hassan. You know, he, like I said, I think he's getting better at rerouting perimeter guys. He's getting better around the rim, but a lot of times you're not seeing that second rotation happen. You're not seeing somebody slide over to Whiteside's guy and keep him off the glass, or, you know, eliminate these second chance points. You know, and he's just he's a really active defender around the paint because there's so many attacks coming at him. There's not a lot of resistance on the wings. When you're having to go through Tyler Johnson, not a great defender at this point in his career. Luke Babbitt, Derek Williams never will be defensive presences. You know, Wayne Ellington is not out there for defense. There's not a lot of defensive options around him that are going to sort of help him on that side. So, yeah, I think that's been the criticism he's heard before. You know, everyone's looked at, hey, the defense plays better when he's not there. Others, you know. That's always sort of a tricky stat if you just kind of take it at face value.
It happened last year too, I think. Wasn't it like after the All-Star break, they just like he was probably the defensive player of the year after the All-Star break.
Right. And you know, after the All-Star break, the one thing that they really did is sort of adopt the style that they played this year, which is more of that up-tempo and sort of that's, I think, a situation where you kind of let his athleticism shine. You know, he can be a good rim runner. His size... You know, to get his athleticism in a package that big, he's a special kind of weapon. And I think that can help their defense too, because when they're not scoring a lot, you know, then you're looking at runouts, you know, off bad shots, off misses. It's a lot easier to set your defense when you're scoring consistently. And when they haven't been scoring consistently a lot, that's really exposed everyone on this roster. But
yeah, that's a great point too. Getting set after a team grabs a defensive rebound.
So, what are your thoughts on James Johnson?
He's just been phenomenal. I think we saw bursts of it with the Raptors. Andy used to cape for him when he was in Toronto to get more spin, and it seems like the Heat are giving him that chance. And he definitely seems like the type of guy who could be inconsistent. But he's pieced together like a pretty long stretch of basketball with Miami, so maybe this version of him is someone who can stick.
Yeah, you know, and I was researching the piece, or I researched a little blurb I did about him, and it's funny because he's one of those guys that the different places he's been, there have been guys lobbying for more playing time for him. I think at every stop, you'll find the article, "Why isn't James Johnson playing more?" And not all of those articles are written by somebody who played high school basketball with him. Like, these are impartial observers who are going, you know, hey, this guy's got a unique skill set. He's got a lot of athleticism. Maybe we can mold him into something. But his big thing has been, you know, Spoelstra kind of told him, we're not going to put you in a box. We're not going to define what your role is. We're just going to kind of let you go out there and play your game. And the one thing that they really challenged him on was getting in shape, kind of dropping weight. And he says he's, you know, everyone is, but he says he's in the best shape of his life. If you've seen some of his dunks lately, he put one on Gobert the other night. I think he had a huge smash in Portland, too. He's had just some monster plays above the rim, really at both ends. Like, he looks like he's in the best shape of his life. So he's, I think, dedicated in I think the Heat are more dedicated to his development. I don't know if that's, you know, different than other teams have been, but probably more dedicated to his development than a lot of people assume that they would be.
Kind of segueing into, I guess, players that the Heat are actually trying to develop. And I know injuries have kind of like mucked up the rotations a little bit, but one, is Magruder a player on this team that they want to get like a look at for the future, or do you kind of think he's an aberration? And I guess what I'm more enamored with would be Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Justice Winslow. Like, what is the, like, are these the guys? They already signed Tyler Johnson. I think Richardson's going to be a free agent in 2018. I can't remember. I'll have to look that up. Like, what is the vision? Like, are those three the guys right now? And with Whiteside, like, is that, do they view that as the nucleus?
Right. And I'm going to bury the lead because you did bring up Magruder first, and this is obviously like a footnote to everything else. I didn't think when Magruder made the team that it was anything more than an end of the bench body. They liked, you know, there was a lot of clamoring for Briante Weber to get that spot. Just a crazy defensive-minded point guard who got some time with him late last season and is back, I think, in Sioux Falls for their D-League
team. Is it a house?
Team. There was a lot of
it's a truck.
Clamoring, I think, from the fans for Briante to get that spot. And Magruder took it, I think, because he showed them, you know, he's got some perimeter scoring skills. He's just one of those guys that just kind of knows the game. He's played overseas. He's played in the D-League. So he's a technically an NBA rookie, but Spo always points out this guy's not really a rookie. So he understands things. And I think he's impressed with just sort of his basketball IQ and his savvy. He's one of those guys that just kind of shows up in the right place at the right time a lot of times.
He looks going, like oh, geez. Hustles. Like
he hustles.
Like...
Yeah, he brings it, I think, every possession. He's had some huge offensive rebounds, which I don't think is a strength of his game at all, but he's just, you know, he outworks people. But, you know, if they don't have any injuries on the perimeter, I don't think he plays at all. But the fact that they did, and he moved himself into the starting lineup and established a rotation spot, I think he's a guy that they wouldn't mind keeping around for a little bit. They're not going to pay him a lot. I don't think most teams would, based off what you've seen so far. But, yeah, I think he's a rotation guy for the rest of this season. Now, getting to the big question, you know, obviously.
Well, they don't even need to worry about paying him because he's non-guaranteed through 2018, 2019.
Right.
But since you're segueing into Richardson, yeah, he's going to be, they paid Tyler, they're paying Dragic. Winslow will be extension eligible in 2018, and Richardson's going to be a restricted free agent in 2018. So I guess I'm kind of like, do you think all these pieces, and I guess you kind of have to encompass Dragic in there too, because the Heat like to have, or it seems, you watch more of them than I do, but it seems like they like to have Richardson try and run some pick and roll. They're grooming Tyler Johnson. It always seems like, oh, we're trying to groom him as a point guard, but they definitely use him just like a combo guard.
Right.
Like, is that – it seems fun because Winslow might be able to play some four, but it also just seems like that's not going to be, you know, a four-headed or five-headed, however many guys are there, a monster that they're going to keep around long-term.
Right. Yeah, and I think they've got three for sure – long-term fixtures, and I'm putting Whiteside in that group, you know, because he just got his 4-year max. Winslow is right there.
Bargain.
Yeah, exactly. Winslow is in there for sure. There's so many interesting things to his game and just what he's able to do at his size with his explosiveness, his defensive mentality. You know, if he gets a jump shot, and granted, that's a huge if. I've watched some airball shots and warm-ups, you know, when there's no hand in his face. I think his shot looks better than it did last year. There was kind of a hitch in it that I think he's gotten better at. The Heat, I think, have their first ever shooting coach that they hired this summer. I don't think that that's a coincidence. I think that was largely a justice move because he's going to need to be able to shoot to get anywhere close to whatever his final ceiling is. But regardless, they've got a lot of time to figure that out. He's the guy they're going to keep. And Josh Richardson, I think, is a long-term player for them. Like you said, they put him on the ball. I think he's really impressed. Last year, you know, he made his impact as a catch-and-shoot guy. and sort of a 3-and-D guy. This year he's done a lot more on the ball, pulling up off the dribble. He's got the athleticism to finish plays at the rim. He's a guy that you forget is 6'6", with a 6'10 wingspan. If you can somehow get him on the ball and have a 6'6 point guard, that's just that's found money at that point. So, you know, Tyler's the interesting one. I don't know if Brooklyn doesn't force Miami's hand with that offer sheet and Dwayne doesn't leave, you know, I don't think Tyler's here. Certainly, I think if Wade was here, I don't think Tyler's here. And I don't think that they would have given him probably what Brooklyn ended up giving him. They like him. Like you said, he is a guy who's getting groomed all the time for this point guard role. I don't know if that's something that's going to ever fit. But, you know, if you can work out this lineup where you've got him with Richardson and Winslow and you've got all three of those pieces together, and you've got different guys who can initiate and create, and maybe you can make something work that way. But then, you know, like you said, you come back to Dragic, and kind of where does he fit in this whole grand scheme? I think he's 31. You know, he's expensive. His time frame doesn't seem like it fits the rest of the core. You worry, yeah, are there going to be wing positions open or perimeter positions open when you've already got Richardson and Johnson and Winslow in there? So Dragic is a really interesting one. I don't know what the end game is for him. I do think the one thing that makes it sort of easy to keep Dragic around and sort of build with him right now is this up-tempo, you know, run-and-gun game that he prefers is the same one that you want Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Justice right. Winslow to play. So it complements those guys. Because those guys aren't full-time creators, having him out there with them sort of helps them out. Dragic is playing really good basketball. You know, his last four, 22 points, 9.5 assists, 2 turnovers, 4.5 rebounds. That 22-9 and 4.5 line, I think that's only Harden, Westbrook, and LeBron this season. So those are, you know, superstar numbers. You know, it's his best season in rebounds, second best season ever in minutes, points, assists. He's playing great basketball. He looks like the guy who's worth, you know, 2 first round picks, who's worth the contract he's got. But the question is, you know, is he worth that to this team if they're not going to contend, you know, in the foreseeable future?
It's ironic because he's probably not worth that to this team, but he's better fit for this team than the team that traded for him. Because I think not having Dwayne Wade there kind of helped him out a little bit now.
Absolutely. And I would say also, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's found his rhythm as Deion Waiters, you know, has gone down with an injury. Because that was sort of similarly, you know, and that's not, look, I'm not trying to knock Waiters. We all know what he is and who he is. But I was surprised at how often they were just kind of going with, let's see what Deion can get us offense. You know, that I always thought there's been the big talk, you know, who's going to be the guy late in games. I thought Dragic was the obvious choice from the beginning because everyone's collapsed on Hassan. Goran's probably your best scoring option, and he's by far your best distributing option. So I think that Deion has kind of gotten out of the picture, and it's just kind of been more Goran-focused, Goran-centric. I think that's helped the offense a lot, and I think it's helped Goran a lot to just have the ball in his hands and let him, you know, go create and see what he can find.
Yeah, you don't want to put too many. Like, it's good to have, like, guys like Tyler Johnson, at least in theory, and Josh Richardson. They're, like, interchangeable, like, play on and off the ball. But a guy like Dwayne Wade was okay making, like, those backdoor cuts and, like, kind of slashing off action. But, like, Deion Waiters is not. He was an okay catch-and-shoot guy in Oklahoma City, but you had Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant creating you wide-open bunnies. And so you don't want to take the ball too out of Dragic's hands too much, because at the end of the day, he's still a point guard. And those guys are going to be most comfortable with the ball in their hands. And I think even if you did that, and I'm not comparing him to Steph or whatever, but Stephen Curry is so good playing off the ball. But the Warriors, aren't going to put him off the ball so much, because it probably helps him to get into rhythm and a comfort zone by being able to create his own shot. And I think you're seeing the same thing in Portland, which is why Evan Turner's not a good fit, is that the Blazers are so reluctant to take the ball out of Damian Lillard's and CJ McCollum's hands, so that Turner's the one that's forced to adjust, because you want those guys, your key players, to be in that comfort zone.
Right, and it's so funny for Miami, because it's kind of the flip side. Like you said, Golden State wants to let Steph get comfortable. Portland wants Lillard and McCollum to get comfortable, because that's what they should do, because those are their best players. And you could make the argument that right after Whiteside, Dragic is the best player. And it's just been funny that he's been so often been the guy who's required to adjust to the guys around him.
So much.
You know, Miami's Phoenix. Yeah. Yeah, and especially, you know, here, it's like Miami's so invested in him. Between the trade that brought him here and the contract he got after getting here, he's got a lot riding on him, and they've just they haven't handled him necessarily like he is sort of one of their prized pieces. But, you know, injuries have kind of forced their hand, and you know, you're able to go out and have an impressive 3-game road trip on the West Coast because of it. So we'll see what happens.
It's just tough, because the offense statistically, it's better with him on the floor, but it's still not good. Is that just coming back to this is how the Heat are being defended? Because it's like you said, it seems like they have more shooters, but teams are packing the paint anyway, and the Heat just aren't. They shoot crappy percentages from 3-point range. It's definitely under 34%. It might be closer to under 33% at this point. Right. So, like, is that just what it is? Like, they're so easy to defend, and it's, to me, it's almost, watching what I've seen from them, it's almost a wonder that Goran Dragic is having the season that he is. Because of, one, how bad Miami looks at points offensively, but how many threes they seem to be missing. And he's been so good at points, and him and Hassan Whiteside, that sometimes I don't even realize how bad the Heat offense is. Like, you know, then I'll be looking at numbers and then realize, like, oh, crap. Like, you know, they're bottom seven in efficiency.
It's bad enough that I had the thought, I think it was the Utah game that was played. They went on... It was an 8-plus-minute scoreless drought. It carried over from the second quarter into the third quarter, but they went almost to the 6-minute mark, and they hadn't scored a point in the third quarter. And that's the extreme example, but there have been a lot of offensive droughts with this team, even with Dragic and Whiteside doing what they do. And I think a lot of it is, yeah, it's not only that Dragic and Whiteside kind of teams know where they want to get and what they want to do, is that there's just not a lot of guys on this team that are going to beat you one-on-one. Right. I think that's why you saw Deion Waiters getting so much attention early and getting so many opportunities, because, you know, technically if you squint your eyes and you don't necessarily look at the percentages, you might be able to convince yourself that, you know, every once in a while he'll be able to make something happen off the dribble. But... You know, Josh, that's not part of Josh's game right now. That's not Justice's game. You know, Justice shooting struggles, I think, carry over from the perimeter all the way up to the rim. He's not finishing like they need him to. Tyler's a guy you're going to live with off the dribble. And then, you know, a lot of these complimentary guys are catch and shoot guys, like you said, aren't hitting their mark. It's interesting to me, and maybe this describes kind of the whole roster in a nutshell, how much better the team has looked just in the few games that they've had Wayne Ellington back. You know, like Wayne Ellington, he's an established commodity, but in the grand scheme of the NBA, he's a pretty forgettable piece. You know, he's a catch and shoot, off the bench complimentary guy. But it's like having that one reliable shooter on the outside has just opened up so much for this team, because now teams can't just run extra defenders at Whiteside rolling to the rim, or extra guys at Dragic when he's attacking. And that just says a lot about what they haven't had, you know, without Ellington in the mix. But no, I think the half-court offense is as bad as it looked. It's been as bad as it looked a lot of times. And that's why I've always written, I think the key for Dragic is just to stay on the pedal the entire time he's on the floor. And he's a guy where I don't think he needs numbers to run. You know, he could be looking at like a 2-on-3, a 3-on-4. Sometimes it's better just for him to probe and see what's there, because if he slows down and
so
waits,
quick.
Yeah, and if he slows down and waits and goes 5-on-5, there's there's a good chance Miami isn't going to get something better than what he's able to create just in that fast break chance.
He's deceptively strong, too. Like, you can kind of tell he's got, like, that definition, but he's just, watching him, he's just more explosive and strong than I think he even realized. And even quicker, like, he has all that put together. And he, I guess it's like you said, I like that, just keep your foot on the pedal, because the Heat half-court offense does not look good. Like, and they even, it's so tough for them to, they can be so good in the pick and roll, but, like, it's so tough for them to generate, like, those half-court pick and rolls. Like, it just seems like there's always, like, this just sea of people just always in the way.
Right. And that's one thing they talk about on the road trip, is just that they've sort of simplified things, and they feel like they have more of their guys in comfortable, defined roles at this point that maybe they didn't even a month ago. They have guys who know where they're supposed to be, where they're supposed to kind of space the floor. And Dragic has talked a lot about that. The spacing's been a lot better lately, and you're seeing the offensive results because of it. But, you could tell that this team just kind of lacked a direction, lacked a cohesiveness. And you know, it's probably too early to say that's, you know, that problem has been swept under the rug. But they've done a good job of hiding it, at least lately.
Now, and so I guess one of my final question might be is, you're Pat Riley. What are you doing with Dragic? Are you making him available? Maybe not actively shopping him, but can he be had leading up to the trade deadline? Or when you look at the Heat's books, they can probably carve out max space this summer fairly easily, I think, without doing anything. And then I don't know what's going to happen with Chris Bosh's number, but if that for some reason comes off their books, you know, they're looking at a ton of cap space. So is his mindset still, I'm going to try and get these impact guys and get them to Miami in free agency, and Dragic will matter to us? And then if for some reason he doesn't get those guys, we'll hear more about Dragic trade rumors next season? Or do you think this is something that, you know, could maybe be done this season, or something the Heat will look to do? Because they're not a playoff team. I think that, especially with all the injuries, they're not a playoff team. So what do you look to do? Is it still the wait-and-see game with them, which is pretty much what they've been playing since LeBron left in 2014?
Yeah, you know, I think if you're Riley, you have to be open to at least seeing what's out there with Dragic. Like you said, that doesn't have to mean shopping him. You don't have to be selling him to anyone, but you certainly need to see, if I'm going to make this call, what's the return that I can get on this point guard who, like we said, probably doesn't fit the timeline of everyone else on this team. But I don't think that it's something that you need to press. If you get closer to the deadline and it's clear that this team is going nowhere, I don't necessarily know if they're all the way out of the race, although I probably just need to – maybe that means I need to pay more attention to the Eastern Conference and the standings.
The East middle class is just so thick that right. Even if you think, you know, the Heat are going to be in the peripherals, but, you know, you start the season at 7-13, right. And even now, like, you have one of the four worst records in the conference. Like, you're only three games out, which is the silver lining, but I just, where are they going to get those three games from? Right. The teams in front of them, you know, they're not impressive. The Knicks are in the playoff race right now, and they're crap. The Magic aren't good. I thought the Hawks were good. They're not good. The Pacers I've been low on forever. So I guess maybe they get there, but in my head, I guess I would wait to see what would happen in free agency anyway. But, like, if you don't come into next season with another star,
right,
like, you know, maybe you see what happens at the beginning of the year, but at some point it has to become, like, you know, Dragic is going to be 32 next year or whatever, maybe 31. Like, his timeline just isn't even going to be kind of close to what this team is doing. Like, at some point it's going to become an issue if the Heat don't have that. They need another guy, at least one more guy, to make Dragic being on the roster worthwhile. And if they don't have him by next season, like, at some point, or is it just, no, maybe they plan on seeing this through with him?
No, I think you're dead on. You know, and even getting into this whole playoff discussion, you know, you've got the other side of it, that is that even a goal that this group should pursue? Because if they are even able to somehow sneak into the eighth spot, you know, what does that mean besides not having a foot in the draft lottery? of what's supposed to be a really good class and getting steamrolled in the first round.
I guess the upshot there is, though, too, I mean, well, there's two flip sides. I guess there always is. One, no one's tanking this year.
Right.
Like, it's just, so if they wanted, if they could trade Dragic and just take that nosedive and, like, they're going to get a top three pick. But two of the top three draft prospects, and I won't pretend to be an expert there, but they're point guards, which I'm not entirely sure the Heat would need even without Dragic, because they keep talking about how they want to develop Tyler Johnson there, how Josh Richardson's on ball. They even seem like they want to use Justice Winslow a little bit more on ball. So maybe it's not worth it to them to tank right now. But I would think if you don't go in free agency and hit a homer and bring in another guy, preferably a 3-and-D wing, like a starry 3-and-D wing, and I don't even know that guy's necessarily out there until 2018. Like, he's just, it's a waste almost, because you're wasting his prime. You could probably, they're definitely, they should match. Right now, they could match what they paid for him, right? Because it was essentially two, what are going to be, what, like low-end first-rounders, mid-end first-rounders? They could, I would think they could definitely get a player and a pick for him.
Yeah, I mean, can they get the Kings on the phone fast enough? Because I think that's who everyone here would like to deal with. He's a marketable commodity. He's a guy who should get you a pretty decent return. He doesn't have a ton of mileage for being his age, because he wasn't made a full-time starter until he got deeper into his career. I don't think he's a guy who's got a very detailed injury history. And he's got a style that a lot of teams are embracing right now, right? This run and gun, this up tempo, high pace, and he's a guy who's comfortable collapsing the defense and kicking it out to three, which is 75% of the league's playbook. So he's a guy that you're able to move. But I think, this is just it's such a strange season for the Heat because of the Bosch situation. And because you have so much money just tied up right there that you can't use, you're effectively operating with what, like 75% of what everyone else is able to spend is what you're able to spend, because you have that money sitting there and you're not getting any return from it. And, and Udonis Haslem, frankly, isn't particularly cheap for what he's giving you. So there's, I don't know what kind of takeaways you can get from this season. You just want to see the young guys develop mainly. You wanted to see Hassan do what Hassan's doing right now. But I think it would be tough for them to decide, based on what happens this season, that Dragic is or isn't the right guy for them. But, I still think you listen. If there is that blockbuster offer, that Godfather offer, then yeah, you give it a good thought. But I think everyone knows, 2017 is a huge summer for this team. I think that's where the whole Dwayne exit came from. It's supposed to be a good draft. That's actually one of the picks that they do still have. And then, there's still some interesting names in free agency. I'm sure every writer has gotten some form of this, but, I got pinged by someone on Twitter the other day who says, hey, if we draft, I think it was Josh Jackson, if we draft one of these, or Giles, or one of them, if we draft this guy and sign Blake Griffin, hey, we're right in the championship race. It's like, well, every single team that probably applies to. I think if you can step out of that and look at the broader picture, if they're able to get a good draft pick and they're able to sign a free agent and you keep a lot of these guys in place, including Dragic, yeah, you could turn it around pretty quickly. And the East is really scalable. Outside of Cleveland, it's pretty easy to kind of muscle in close to behind them. So I don't think Riley's a guy who wants to blow it up. I don't think he would, unless he, like I said, unless he had something he just couldn't refuse. But, at the same time, he'd be foolish not to see if that is something that's out there, because, there's not a ton of point guards. A ton of point guards are probably going to be available, because most of the good ones, their teams are going to be in the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And there's so many point guards on the market next summer, too. You just look at, from Lowry and Curry to Chris Paul to Derrick Rose, and Rajon Rondo will probably be back there. I think his deal's non-guaranteed. Drew Holiday. But someone like obviously Griffin, but someone like a Gordon Hayward would be great for that team. I can't picture Orlando letting him walk, and I'm not sure I want him. But Serge Ibaka, I was surprised to see, is not like 28. I think he's 26 right now or 27. Him and Whiteside would be pretty scary. And the Heat wouldn't be stupid like the Magic and just stock their roster with all the big men ever. So there'll be some options out there. And if you can get one, like you said, it's easy to turn it around in the East.
Right.
That's where we'll leave it for today. The Hardwood Knox wants to thank Zach Buckley for coming on. He was fantastic with his Heat insight. If you want to talk to him more, get at him on Twitter. You can find him at Zach Buckley NBA. That's BUCKLEY NBA. If you want to follow Andy on Twitter, you can get at him at Andrew D. Bailey. Adam Frommel can be found at Frommel09. That's FROMAL09. If you want to hit me up, I'm at Dan Favale. That's FAVALE. You can try and find us all at Hardwood Knox, but that Twitter account is dormant because we suck. There will be no shout outs to Ben or Udre because my two comrades are not here. Until next time.